Hello, thanks for tuning in to Learn, Grow, Succeed, the leadership podcast with me, Tom Hallett. This podcast is all about providing you with insights and tips to help you on your journey towards exceptional leadership. Hi guys, welcome back to the Learn, Grow, Succeed podcast. We've got something a little bit different planned for you today with a new installment of the conversation series that we've had running on the podcast for about a year now. And these podcasts are where we talk to subject matter experts from the XL Communications Network to draw their knowledge and insights and expertise from the worlds they operate in and to share it through our podcast. And today we have a real treat for you. Someone who has been a long-term friend to XL back before virtual programs were even a thing. Someone who is probably best known for having the 11th, you hear me right, the 11th most watched TED Talk ever. I did check that this morning. We are in October 2020. And he has in excess of 33 million views, and with only people like Bill Gates and Simon Sinek above him. Our guest today is also the author of two best-selling books, with his latest, The Speaker Coach, being included on the 10 most inspirational business books for 2020. And on top of that, he is also a presenter, facilitator, and works with clients all over the world on their advanced communication skills. So without any further ado, welcome Graham Shaw to the Learn, Grow, Succeed podcast.
Morning, Tom. Great to meet you and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. And Graham and I, we've known each other for quite a long time now, Graham, a good few years, and we've worked together for all that time, and we've worked on some programs recently. Just for full disclosure for the podcast, we are friends as well as work partners, aren't we, Graham?
We certainly are.
Awesome. So, I mean, how are you today, Graham? Are you good? How have things been going through lockdowns and all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, Tom. And things have been going pretty good, actually. I was very fortunate in that, despite the fact that all of my live speaking engagements were immediately cancelled, so suddenly I had an empty diary, one or two of my clients decided that I might be able to convert what I was doing to virtual. And of course, we've done some work in that regard, too. And so I've been very fortunate that to be able to translate what I do into virtual sessions.
Awesome. So you've been keeping busy and out of trouble throughout the COVID situation.
That's it, yeah.
Awesome. Well, as well as just being the major TED speaker that Graham is and a friend to the business and to myself, we have brought him onto the Learn, Grow, Succeed podcast for a very important reason. And what we've titled this podcast is How to Deliver Messages with Impact and Add Some Fun to Team Communications. And the reason for bringing it onto the podcast today is we often talk about communication skills in a leadership and a management setting. And now more than ever, in this move to the virtual, like Graham, you were just talking about then, we don't just want boring communications. And in turbulent times as a leader, you need to really understand effective ways to communicate with people and different ways to communicate with people. And that is Graham's speciality. So that's what we're going to explore further today. So before we get into the real detail of it, Graham, where did you develop these communication skills from? So what's your background and how did you get into this world?
Well, my background's in teaching, Tom. I was a primary school teacher, and I actually used to draw while in school, while teaching in assemblies. I would tell a story. I was the deputy head teacher of a school, so I was often taking assemblies, and I would sketch on the stage on the old acetate, so that the overhead projector So tell a Bible story or whatever it was, or any story, and the pictures would come up on the screen. So I used to use it then. And I've always drawn since I was young, always loved cartooning. And yeah, so that's how I got started on that. And then I moved to British Airways in the 90s and got involved in leadership and management development programs. And I naturally, just now and then, every time there was a sort of management concept to explain in a training course, I might sketch an idea on a flip chart. So it started a little bit informally, really.
Okay. So it was through it, when you moved into that corporate development experience, you really thought maybe they're missing a trick here by not using sketching and visualizing what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, and it was a very immediate way to capture attention. So I wouldn't draw all the time, but I might have a session of an hour or something, and I would do the main idea, the main concept that we were learning. I'd turn into a cartoon or a visual just to capture attention, really.
Awesome. And obviously that evolved, started in acetate back then, and it evolved, I imagine, over the years. So it's moved to virtual today. But I guess the fundamental skills and the ability to communicate is still what it was the whole way through.
Yeah, it's exactly the same, Tom. And I found the more that I used it, the more I could use a metaphor or a story, or perhaps explain a simple model, on personality types, the way people have different styles socially. And I could turn them into pictures and people would sort of get it. And also, it's very immediate because it captures attention if you do it live. That's the big distinction, really. It's one thing to have a PowerPoint slide or something already on the screen, but if you can actually sketch something while people are watching it, it just hooks attention and curiosity.
Wow, that's it sounds really interesting. I wonder, the listeners of this podcast, Graham, are generally leaders in businesses that they're in, and they'll always be looking for different ways to communicate with people. So, I wonder if you could just elaborate on that slightly, on how people can use the sketching and those visualization skills in different scenarios that they find themselves in.
Yes, I mean, there's obviously the straight sort of presenting. So you might be explaining a concept or a project to a team, and you could be doing that live in a room, but increasingly now virtually. And nowadays, with the technology, you could use possibly something like an iPad, or Jamboard is one commercial product available, or Miro. There are a few that you can get free, and you can have teams on there. So you could occasionally sketch a graph. You could sketch a project. You might even get a team to collaborate. So again, with some of this technology, you can have different people either typing post-it notes, but also sketching symbols. And presenting, training, problem solving, putting all the ideas up. It's very easy to do once people have got the confidence to have a go.
Okay, so it's a lot more than just a little bit of fun. When people think of drawing, sometimes they think of maybe thinking about their kids and things, but it's a lot more than that.
Well, it is. And I wouldn't underrate the fun. It is a lot of fun drawing. When I run workshops corporately for people on applying these skills to business, we have a lot of fun drawing a few cartoons, some symbols, metaphors, that sort of thing. And people love it mainly because it surprises them that they can in fact do it. But underlying that, there's a deeper message about the way that image can be absorbed and how people can recollect it. So, if, for example, you draw a mountain with a little man on the top or a lady on the top waving a flag, you could talk about success. You could turn that mountain into a journey, draw a landscape and put an X on the landscape and say, we are here. Yeah, we're a long way from success at the top of the mountain. You could draw some hurdles and say, what are the hurdles that we need to get over? So you could turn this into a powerful metaphor and also engage people, because once you start making a mark on that page, whether it's virtual or not, people can't take their eyes off it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, as someone who sat in your programs, Graham, they are so engaging. You You start with your jaw drop to say, how can you draw these things at the drop of a hat? And then once you start to realize that you can do it yourself, it's quite an incredible skill to have. I wonder, Graham, a lot of people, when they think of drawing, immediately go kind of take a step back, go back into their shells a little bit, and maybe think, that's not for me. I'm not the creative artist kind of type. What is that true, or is that something you see a lot?
Yeah, well, I do see a lot. When I did that first that talk at in Hull, that was the, you mentioned about the TED Talks, and that was at TEDx Hull in 2015. Mm-hmm. And I was in a theatre, and I asked the audience how many people thought they could draw, and hardly any of the hands went up. And in a room of 10 people, you might get one or two. So most people really don't believe they can. But what's terrific is that the way I try and get them drawing within a few minutes, they I'm not saying they draw like Michelangelo, but they draw well enough. And this is the key point. You know, I'm not saying you're going to draw like Michelangelo or Cezanne or David Hockney or something immediately, but you actually, everybody can draw well enough to get an idea across. Mm-hmm. Because the evidence is there that simple symbols will stay in the memory. It doesn't matter whether they're fantastically drawn or not.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. Yesterday, I was on a storytelling workshop with one of our clients, and slight digression, one of my specialities, but we were on this storytelling workshop, and we were talking about what makes a story memorable. And one of the key ingredients in making a story memorable is engaging different senses for people and invoking emotions in people. And when I think about the work you do with people to visualize concepts, ideas and stories, is exactly that. You know, you're engaging a new sense by creating a sketch in front of people. So you're engaging their visuals, not just talking to them auditory. Also, I guess you can use those sketches to invoke either senses or emotions into things to make things a lot more memorable.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a simple sketch really can do so much. And metaphors are very powerful because they contain such rich information.
Yeah.
And most things in business can be turned into a story. A case study really is a story. You know, I had a client, did some work with a client, and they're quite a big, well, very big company. And what they do is one of the things they do is store information for their clients in the cloud, you know.
Yeah.
And I was working with a group of a pre-sales team who would work with a client on discussing what they can offer. So I said to them, look, on the whiteboard, see if you can draw a metaphor to explain what you do. And a couple of chaps came up with, they drew a castle. Okay, so they drew a very simple castle with a drawbridge and a little sort of strong room at the top and all the rest of it and a moat. And they used that castle to explain, as though it were to a client, how they keep their information safe. You know, we can lift up the drawbridge. Nobody can get in. You know, we've got a special locked room in the center of the castle up here, which is for really, really sensitive information, you know. And so they use that metaphor, you know, as a way of explaining to a client what they do, and they showing it on a whiteboard. So, you know, when you're telling a story like that or explaining what you can offer, a simple picture can often really, and that picture would stay in the mind of the client.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Great example. So, you're talking about a business there where I guess your average Joe, like you or me, don't really understand cloud computing in detail. So actually distilling it down into that castle metaphor makes me understand it, and it makes me remember them. So it can be really powerful.
Exactly. And it's very, this way of doing something, Tom, is very low tech, but high impact.
Yeah.
So this isn't great technology, but it's just really simple. When I was at British Airways, I was organizing a leadership program. We had a speaker come over, and he was going to do dozens of programs. And I was in charge of this program. And I sent a message to say, what equipment did he need? And it came back. He said, I need a visualizer, which I didn't know what that was. But basically, it was a plinth with a video camera above it. And he said, I'm going to draw on a bit of paper and it will project the image onto a screen. Well, he drew things, he wrote things, he did rough diagram sketches, graphs. And he really engaged this audience of 100 British Airways managers every day through this method. Now, we didn't necessarily give out all those rough bits of paper to people, but you know, that you can turn some of these things into professional looking diagrams and all the rest of it. But the point was, in the moment, he really had their attention. And that's where this is helpful. And like that client with the castle, you know, you can really get people's attention when you're doing something like that.
Yeah. So you just to build on that, you would recommend that this is this ability to sketch and visualize things. So it's not just when you're preparing for a meeting, maybe having that beautiful castle metaphor to present to people, but it's about doing it live as much as well.
Yes, I mean, you could. There's a few options, really. You can have it all totally prepared, which is fine. At the same time, I think you're missing a trick if you don't do at least some of it live.
Yeah.
If it was something quite complex, you could have part of it already drawn, you know, and add things. That's a good way of doing it. But if you can manage to carry off something live, the moment you make a mark on that iPad or flip chart, I mean, even in a virtual meeting, if you weren't good at technology. I mean, I can, in the room I'm in now, I've got a flip chart, or you could have I've got a whiteboard. You just point the camera at it and sketch there.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying draw all the time, but people will really, it will really grab their attention when you do the occasional thing like this.
Yeah. My mind's now rushing back to the last time I was in one of your workshops, Graham. And my next question was going to be, so, you know, what are your tips for people to be able to do that? And I think one of your openers in a lot of the time is around just drawing a line on a piece of paper and going from there. You can probably explain it much more succinctly than I.
Yeah, one of my tips, my biggest tip is just practice it first.
Okay.
And if you keep it simple, but practice it first. So it could be something like you've got a project you want to explain that's going from January to March. Okay, practice it first. You know, work out you're going to write January on the left-hand side of the page, March on the right, and work out what you're going to draw and what you're going to say. So it might be the project kicks off in January. You might think, oh, I'll draw a little stick man kicking a football or a stick woman, you know, kicking a football. So that's the kickoff. You might say, okay, during that month, we're going to speak to customers. So again, I teach people little symbols for people, and you can write the word customers. My tip is to do a picture and write the words, not just pictures, because when you get the two together, people really get it. And then you might say, we're going to do a global survey. You might draw a circle to be a globe and sketch, write the word survey above it, you know? You could make that up, create it in advance. So my biggest tip is then practice it, because when you practice it, you know you can carry it off. And seriously, you don't have to practice it much. Just to make sure you don't run out of space. I mean, I've done something where I haven't practiced it and I've run out of space on the flip chart. And also the other key tip is it really doesn't have to be perfect. You know, it has to be good enough. Anybody can do it if you plan it in advance.
Yeah, definitely. And I was thinking as you were talking there, the images that I've seen created in your workshops, they don't have to be perfect. It's as long as you can get the general point across, that's all that matters.
Yeah, well, you've seen it yourself, Tom. We not long ago, we did a virtual workshop, which you kindly were involved in helping me to facilitate with a client who had a group of young future managers on a program from all around different countries in the world and hadn't actually met each other. And the objective was that they should have some fun, meet each other, but also be able to get into their project teams and share their strengths and their development areas in order to do an actual project, which was coming up. And as you'll recall, we you know, I was teaching them how they could do these simple sketches in the first sort of hour or so. But then in their breakout groups, even with just those few, what I call elements in their visual toolkit, what I try and do is get people to build up a range of symbols they can use that can mean different things. So you've got a mountain, you've got a target, you've got a book, you've got a building that can all represent things. And then get into their groups. And we gave them a little bit of time just to prepare, didn't we? In a break time, just to prepare what was essentially a simple mind map that would show their strengths and their development areas, presented pictorially. And then they had to, in their breakout groups virtually, present them to their colleagues. And I think you'd probably agree, they were, I have to say, they were sort of bowled over at how successful they were.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was a fantastic workshop. And we had a number of objectives, didn't we, Graham, to that? Mm. And it was giving people these visualization skills to communicate with impact. It was... the things you say there about getting people to understand people's strengths and weaknesses. And I know a lot of the feedback from that session was how much more memorable different people in the room, or in the virtual room, I should say, I'm doing inverted commas, even though you can't see me, were, because it was done in that visual way. So it really, really had an impact.
It did. And the thing that I sort of major on really is getting the people who are involved to do it. It's one of the things that, if I say it myself, you have to be a bit careful of, is drawing things that look just too flash and difficult for people to do.
Yeah.
And it could be all about, I could spend the whole session sketching stuff, but that's not what it's about. It's about saying to the group, you can do this well enough. You know, a bit like that first TED talk at Hull, you know, it was saying to the audience, actually, you can do this. The other massive benefit, and that's what that first TED talk was all about, the other massive benefit, of course, as a huge byproduct, is the belief change in people. You know, when people go from, what's this guy doing? You know, I don't think I can't possibly draw, I haven't drawn anything, you know, I can't even draw a stick man. When people go from that to drawing something and holding them up in a virtual workshop on the screen and seeing how well they've done, then they are, their beliefs, in my opinion, are shifted.
Yeah.
I've lost count of every week I get people write to me because they've seen that talk online, telling me how delighted they are that they've learned, they can actually learn to draw.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that again comes back to the versatility of these skills and the workshops that you run is, and many of the listeners on the podcast will be familiar with sort of an iceberg model, where you have a lot of the things above and below the waterline, and above it is the stuff you can see. So the skills, which is, you know, the ability to sketch and to visualize, but that really powerful underlying and hidden benefit of going through this workshop is it challenges their beliefs.
Well, it does. And if you think about it, it challenges their beliefs. And of course, where that goes, once people think, well, hang on a minute, 15 minutes ago, I didn't think I could possibly learn to draw. I've now drawn some actually pretty acceptable sketches. Yeah. And the brain kind of goes, well, I wonder what else I can do. And that was my challenge on that talk in Hull, was to say to the audience in the theatre, well, actually, you know, 15 minutes ago, you were thinking you couldn't draw. Now you've discovered actually that, you know, you've made a good start and perhaps this is something you could learn. You can draw to a reasonable extent. What else are you thinking you can't do? What else, what other limiting beliefs do you have? So especially in business, for managers, this is a very, what looks like a lightweight exercise sometimes, even as an icebreaker, but can have a massive impact. I mean, I've lost count of the number of times I do talks. I've done several since lockdown, about four or five, keynote speeches in motivational speeches for corporate organizations for their conferences on these skills. But one of the big things they wanted me to do on each occasion is to make a big point about this idea of beliefs. And so it's a very simple but very powerful way of getting people to challenge their beliefs in a business organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to that program we ran together, we all the different outcomes we had for that, we challenged people's beliefs and their ability to draw. You mentioned icebreaker there. I think one of the challenges we're all facing around the world with the move to virtual is you don't have those coffee machine chats, the water cooler chats, whatever you want to call them. That was also one of our objectives, wasn't it, for the workshop the other week, was just to be a slightly different way to bring a group of people that didn't know each other before together.
It is, and certainly I wouldn't underestimate the icebreaker, Tom, and the value of that, because you create the rapport, you create the fun, the sense of fun. And in this instance, many people, when they've learned, that character that I created, Spike, when they've learned how to draw this character, Spike, who featured in that TED talk, just getting colleagues to do that, is such a jaw-dropping thing that, it's a fabulous icebreaker. And I've known people who've learned it from me, and then they've gone on and said, actually, I was running a training program, nothing to do with drawing. They might be, for example, they might be running something on finance for non-financial managers, And there's a group of people in the room, half of whom are thinking, oh, I'm hopeless at finance. And they can say to them, look, this is all about finance today. You may not be experienced at it. Would you be prepared to do a quick activity for 3 or 4 minutes? So the group will probably say, begrudgingly, some of them, well, you go on then, yes, all right. Okay, how many people can draw? Hardly anybody. Right, have a go at this. Right, then they draw Spike and everybody goes, oh, wow, actually, I'm quite impressed with my own drawing even. And they can relate that to their business topic of finance then. Okay, so they can say, well, a few minutes ago, you didn't think you could draw anything. Likewise, you thought learning finance, was going to be really difficult. Actually, it is something that you can do when we do it in the way that makes it easy for you. And that's what we're going to do today. So you can link that icebreaker to the learning of finance or project management or computing or anything. So it's a small thing that can have a really big impact on people's ability to open their minds for the learning in that workshop.
Yeah, definitely. Sort of gets you warm up to do an exercise. It's almost like warming up to learn
Yes.
something by bringing in a very simple new skill that you didn't think you could do.
That's it. So the warming up is really important in these sorts of situations, Tom.
Yeah, awesome. And you mentioned different types of organizations there, like finance, project management. Is there a niche for this, or have you worked across the board?
Yeah, I've worked with all kinds of organizations, and some of them wouldn't hopefully mind me mentioning them, but I've worked, for example, well, we did some work, Tom. You asked me to work with some ophthalmologists in Holland, in Amsterdam. I don't know if you recall that. They were fascinated by this, and one of the doctors there came up to me and she said, as an aside, she said, this is absolutely brilliant. I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, she said, I could sit down with a patient, quite often, I have to explain something like why they're taking drops for their eyes. And she said, with this technique, I could be sitting at a table with them, and just with my pen, I could sketch the eye. I could draw arrows to show the pressure buildup going out on the eye and making it hurt. That's why it hurts. And these lines going out, pushing on the eyeball, creating pressure. She said, then I could draw, the drops going in there. And then I could draw the arrows going the other way and the pressure being relieved. So she said, with just a quick sketch on a bit of paper at a desk in front of a client, without the need for a PowerPoint slide or anything, and they can hook attention and people will get it. So, I mean, that was a great example of when you're explaining something one-to-one.
And great example of the audience, the medical audience, which is traditionally often quite data and detail orientated. We're doing something like sketching, which is all about chunking up their messages, right?
Absolutely, Tom. And it just doesn't, I mean, she was working just one-to-one, but she could be explaining it to a group. That doesn't preclude her from having a fantastic set of PowerPoint slides that the whole audience are going to get. What the skill of the rough sketch is, it's not about thinking, oh, this isn't good enough to give out because it doesn't look professional at the end. The rough sketch captures the attention in the moment, you know, and that's what she was doing. And I've worked with all sorts of other organizations. I mean, opticians chain store, you know, that's got chains around the world, stores around the world, where they're in-store trainers, where they haven't got often time to create whole fancy PowerPoint slides and have a slideshow and stuff. They're doing a bit of in-store training informally.
Yeah.
So use it. I've worked with design thinkers in design thinking facilitators in Google, for example, at two conferences on helping them to be able to use sketching skills as part of their design thinking. So there's all sorts of organizations. Banks, the first one I worked for was HSBC Bank, ran lots of programs for them for their trainers. So trainers particularly like this. So teams of trainers love this. Yeah. So they're sort of prime candidates, really.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you very kindly ran a workshop for our entire training organization, didn't you, at Excel? And
yes.
We're constantly being bombarded with cartoons and things being included in slide decks and stuff like that. If anything, I will give out one warning here on the podcast. That is, if you watch Graham's TED Talk on YouTube, or indeed work with Graham at any point, people get completely addicted to drawing and find themselves doodling all the time. It's that sort of big an impact on people. I've had a member of my team, I had to say, can you stop doing some drawings for 2 minutes?
I had a lady on a workshop once. She wrote to me. She went back to Devon on the train after a workshop in London. And she wrote back to me to say thank you. And she said, I was drawing all the way home on the train. And I couldn't stop drawing. And she said, when I got home, I showed the drawings to my daughter. And I remember the actual sentence she wrote. She said that to her mummy, she said, you couldn't have drawn those, mummy. That must have been the man on the course.
Amazing. I bet you get all sorts of reactions from people in the audience. You know, obviously that's a daughter seeing what her mum's done, but
yeah.
I bet you get some awesome reactions live in workshops as well with people.
Well, you really do, especially when if you've got a room full of people and they hold their drawings up and show each other, or even virtually, you know, when we were working with the group recently, you recall that they're all on the screen, you know, people are all on the screen there, unless it's a huge thing with too many people. But and when they hold the drawings up and see what each other have drawn, they react very positively, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, we talked there about, you know, the power of visualization and that kind of thing in these workshops when people can sketch ideas and make it clear. I wonder, Graham, if I can just pick your brains a little bit on the current climate that we're in. It's sort of undeniable. We've moved into this virtual world at the moment with COVID-19 going on. Through all the programs you've been running in the last 6 months, I wonder how these visualization techniques can support people in the current climate.
Different ways. If I think of some examples, most of the stuff is done virtually in the current climate. I think it's helpful to think about the applications. Mm-hmm. So how they can help people is the client's not interested in drawing cartoons. Okay, they want an outcome. So in the case of the work that we did with the client that you mentioned, you know, their outcome was the people to get to know each other, to have a great time with learning about the team, but specifically to learn each other's strengths and development areas so they could apply them to a project. So that was an outcome. And we managed to get them to do the drawings and apply it to that outcome. When I've worked with different organizations, I've worked with two now who the outcome, one live and one virtual, and the outcome they wanted was at the end of it, they wanted people to be able to sketch their objectives for the year. Okay. And I was invited back I've done two live sessions before, this was way before lockdown, for this organization, and he invited me back 2 or 3 years later at about 30 people in the room, and they applied the skills in the room on the day. We did a couple of hours. They wanted people to draw their objectives for the year and represent them pictorially, and that worked. I thought that worked fine. The same client came back to me a couple of years later and said, okay, what we want to do, we've got some new members in the team now, we've got about 40 people. We'd like to run a similar thing again as part of a day. They were doing some other stuff as part of a day. They got me in for a couple of hours. And they said, the reason we're getting you back is people kept those pictures on their walls throughout the year.
Yeah.
And we've looked at them again. We looked at them again and we were amazed how many of the things that we drew we'd achieved. Okay. And so it's that power of having something in front of you, a bit like when people have a vision board, something that subconsciously works on the brain and reminds you of where you're headed. So, you know, those are two examples. And that's apart from clients like, I had a client in the States recently. They won't mind me mentioning Adobe. and they were talking about, they wanted to be able to use these drawings in all sorts of ways, like presenting ideas, you know, explaining projects, all sorts of things. So how it helps people, I think, in this current climate is to have an activity that gets people together to learn a new skill, to have a new skill in their kit bag that they can apply in that specific way, but also they can apply in numerous ways afterwards. So those people we had in that workshop who were applying this with you, Tom, that were applying the skills to describing their strengths and areas for development, of course, they've got a skill now in their toolbox that they can use for all sorts of other things.
So you
get much more, if you like, bang for your buck than what we just do on the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing you touched upon slightly in that as well is the power of creating a vision.
Yes.
And, you know, people talk about visions all the time, yet miss the link between vision and visuals. Is that, you know, visions are very powerful when they're done pictorially, and visions, I think, are something people maybe have not as focused on as we've gone through this COVID situation, because people have been in sort of the fight mode to get through all the change and trials and tribulations they're facing as a business. And you know, as we look to 2021 and businesses are looking at how they can have a sustainable business going forward in this new normal we operate in, you know, being able to create a vision as a visual, it's been proven time and time again that that's a hugely powerful thing to be able to do.
Well, it certainly is. And, you know, I've got countless visions that I've drawn over the years, and you look back and see that certain things have come true. You know, it's amazing how powerful they are. And interestingly, years and years ago, there was a piece of research, and I can't remember it word for word, but it went something like, there was a study done many years ago where they took, you know, a group of students from one of the universities and looked at how well they'd done in their careers. And not that it's the only measure, but one measure was how well they'd done financially. And they did a piece of research to try and find out what these people did that others didn't.
Okay.
And there was one thing they found that virtually all of the people who, you know, like 10% of the people had more wealth than the rest of the 90% put together, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And what they found was there was something that those people did that the others didn't. And the most common thing that they all did was they wrote down their goals. They wrote down their goals. Now, if you ally that to actually drawing them and creating a vision, either creating a vision board, sticking pictures up, or sketching things yourself, like in a mind map or something, whether it's personal goals, financial goals, you know, contribution goals, health, you know, very powerful.
Yeah, hugely. I guess also as a visual, it is something you can put in front of you on your wall and you can see it at a glance. You don't have to read the words. You can just, I don't know, see that you're standing on top of that mountain and have achieved what you wanted to achieve.
Well, absolutely. And it reminds you of what you're aiming at. It gives you that focus. I mean, obviously, that's not all you're going to do. You're not going to just put that up and leave it there. But it does give you that focus because, you know, we get what we focus on, and the brain seeks meaning, doesn't it? And it filters out things that aren't useful for us. But when you've drawn down something that I'd like to write a book, or I would like to do this, I would like to do that, I'd like to achieve this target in the year, you know, it actually reminds you, and then you begin to see things that would help you with that.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it is an amazing skill, this ability to visualize and how it can drive you forward. And back at in your intro, Graham, we talked about how you've got a couple of best-selling books out there as well. How do your two books support this journey into visualization and the ability to communicate?
Well, I think the first one, The Art of Business Communication, really is a book that I don't necessarily think is a bestseller. I think they've both won awards, which is great, but they're not going to beat J.K. Rowling, you know. But they both fortunately I was very fortunate in that the publisher Pearson entered them for awards, which they both got into the final of and were commended. So that was great, but the first one, The Art of Business Communication, that actually takes people from start to finish, right through the sorts of things that we would do on a workshop. But you can actually learn it from the book, and actually you could learn it from the book and watching the first TED talk at TEDx Hull is a great one to watch to get you drawing. If you also watch the one I did at TEDx Vienna called How to Draw to Remember More, that was the second one I did, a bit more niche. The one that's just about how to draw at Hull, everybody loves to learn how to draw. It's a bit more niche to learn how to draw to remember. That's a niche skill. But so the book actually takes you through from start to finish how you can sketch things, and then also how you can present. So it gives tips on not only the sketching, but gives tips on if you were standing in front of a flip chart or a whiteboard, and really how you can explain things to people. That's The Art of Business Communication. Yeah. The other book is The Speaker's Coach. And that's really, it's subtitled 60 Secrets to Make Your Talk, Speech, or Presentation Amazing. And actually that is full of cartoons too, but it's not particularly teaching people to draw cartoons, although a couple of the sections do. But it's actually giving all the best tips I can think of from my years of coaching people on speaking, what I've learned from others, and that each one is illustrated, and it's a sort of book that you can dip in and out of. So it's ideal for anybody who's got to prepare a talk, whether it's virtual or whether it's live. Can teach you all the skills of preparing, planning a talk, practicing it, and then actually performing it, actually how you deliver it. So it's the whole range of skills in 60 little snippets, really.
Okay, so if you know people are listening to our podcast today and thinking, yeah, I'd definitely like to up my game in the ability to visualize, but also as a leader, as a manager, wanting to improve how they present to people, then obviously there's the TEDx talks they can listen to, but also those books will take them through that journey as a sort of a self-directed way to gain those skills.
Absolutely. So those TEDx talks, Vienna and Hull, are great because they're free. You just go on there and really learn the principles and get some skills. And then if people are interested, then the books obviously are a helpful supplement to really get into it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess the next step is to, once you're inspired by all those, is then to reach out and see how we can support businesses and teams in person as well, which obviously is something you and I, Graham, work a lot on at the moment.
Well, that's right. The best thing always is to be in person with people, because you get the chance to listen to their particular needs and find out what they want to apply these skills to. Because the skills themselves are enjoyable and it's great fun drawing, and you know, why not just do it for its own sake? But in a business context, you know, we need to recognize that if people are going to invest their time in learning these skills, that they want an outcome that's a tangible Right. outcome. And you know, when people find that they can apply them, that's the key thing. And to work with people directly is really the best way to do that. So
yeah. Fantastic. One question I've been dying to ask, Graham, How did you get into doing your TED talk, and why do you think it is the 11th most watched TED talk, up there with esteemed people like Bill Gates and Simon Sinek?
Well, like most things that I've achieved, they're mainly luck, actually, because I got It was like the first book I wrote, Pearson, one of the commissioning editors from Pearson came to me and said, we've heard about the work you do with the sketching, and we think there's a niche for a business book, a niche book in that market, because we haven't actually seen a book on the shelves for business that talks about how you do just this sketching to get ideas across. So that was a kind of luck sort of thing. And as was the second book, because they asked me to write. But with the TEDx Hull, I was just so fortunate. One of the organizers of TEDx Hull, a lady called Helen Bissett, happened to be a member of the group that I was teaching on a course called Cartooning for Trainers. So it was an open course. She'd signed up for it down near London. And I think I must have done about an hour and a half or something. We got to the break time and she came up and introduced herself and said, I'm an organizer of TEDx Hull. Would you like to come and speak? And immediately she knew and I knew what I could do in that talk. So so that was the first one. And then the to answer your question about why was it so popular? I think why it's so popular is what I picked was something that the vast majority of people think they can't do and is a universal. It's a bit like I can't sing. You know, some people go, you can either sing or you can't. And it's drawing. People go, you've either got it or you haven't. And I knew that. And also I knew from my experience of just doing it in workshops, what a jaw dropper it was when people found they could. And in fact, I created Spike. It wasn't my idea to run workshops on drawing skills in the first place, but somebody saw me when I was running an NLP program, somebody saw me sketching and said, can you come and teach this to our we've got a voluntary group of trainers, come and teach it to them. So I created Spike then, although I didn't name him, as a simple cartoon to start them off. And I knew that if I did that on this talk at TEDx Hull, that people would really like it. And but I didn't ever believe that it would be that popular. I mean, I knew it would. I thought if I got 50,000 views or something, I thought that'd be fantastic. Yeah. But I didn't think it'd be that popular. Yeah. And actually, the next one I did in Vienna, I was asked because the curator of TEDx Vienna, a chap called Vlad Gosman, he'd seen the Hull talk and then asked me to speak in Vienna. So the talk I did there was called How to Draw to Remember More. And that's more of a niche. I mean, that's got a couple of million views, but that's niche. So it hasn't got such wide appeal because it's about how we apply drawing to learning and memory. So it's a bit of more of a niche topic. So to answer your question, I think I just happened to stumble over something that had very wide appeal. I think that's why it's so successful. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a fantastic watch. From those 33 million views, there's probably at least 10 of them, which are me, because I've watched it quite a few times. Highly entertaining. So anyone listening, that should be next on your self-directed learning pathways, popping over to YouTube. And if you just search TEDx Graham Short, it'll pop up. And you'll see it's the one with the most views by a long shot. Awesome. So, Graham, I think I've got to the bottom of my question list, but with one exception. Do you think there are any questions I should have asked you that I haven't?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. Well, one of the things that sometimes people think about is, well, what's the evidence that drawing helps you? You know, I mean, we could see it. I can see it. We know it anecdotally and it happens. But, you know, I often, when I run corporate programs, talk about evidence. And it's interesting. In terms of drawing helping you to remember, because we've talked about now drawing to help explain things to others.
Yeah.
But the evidence of drawing to help yourself, there was a study I talked about in TEDx Hull, TEDx Vienna rather, about from the University of Waterloo in Canada. And they did a study on how drawing helped people to remember lists of words. So they basically got people to remember lists of words in different ways. One was to just write out the words. And the other one was to spend probably about 30, 40 seconds drawing a picture of each word. So if it was balloon, they drew a simple balloon, you know.
Yeah.
What they found was after they gave them a surprise memory test on those, their results were absolutely staggering. They found that where people had drawn a symbol or a picture for the word they remembered virtually double, on average, double the number of words in a test.
Wow.
Right, than if they hadn't, double, okay. And they even compared that with three or four other methods of learning the words. So compared them with describing the words, writing out the characteristics of the words, visualizing the words. They had about three or four other methods. In every case, drawing beat the others, okay. And when they were just looking at, you know, why that is, there is a lot of evidence that drawing creates a stronger memory trace in the brain than any of those other methods. I'm not a brain expert, but in order to transfer a word into a picture, you have to do a number of things. You have to have some elaboration in your mind. You have to picture what it could look like. You create some physical characteristics of it. You have to create a visual. So then your hand has to move, you're doing. We know through seeing, hearing, saying, doing, okay, using the different senses. Mm-hmm. But you have to do something. And then once you've got an image, you've got something to look at. So there's quite a lot going on there that enables people then to remember those words. And again, I often have used things like mind maps for students in learning and people in business, and using drawings for self, for their own memory. But if you look at the research just plainly on pictures, years ago in Scientific American, there was a gentleman called Ralph Haber, showed people 2,560 pictures, okay, at 10-second intervals. It took a long time. It took a long time, hours on end. But then, over a day, and then an hour later, he started to show people two slides side by side. And he would ask them, which of these have you seen before? And they had to say, and on average, they got between 95% correct.
From the total amount?
Yeah. That, wow. I've seen this one, but I haven't seen that one. You know, yeah, I've seen that, but I haven't seen this. He wondered if it made any difference how long you showed them the picture for. So he started to reduce the amount of time they saw the picture from 10 seconds, getting down to just 1 or 2 seconds. And guess what difference it made to the results? It made absolutely no difference at all. Whether people had seen it for 2 or 3 seconds or 10 seconds, they still remembered most of them. And if you thought that was impressive, that research was built upon by a gentleman called Ray Nickerson. And his study was published the first one, Ralph Haber's study, was in Scientific American. Ray Nickerson was in the Canadian Journal of Psychology. And he showed people firstly 600 pictures, but ultimately 10,000 pictures at the rate of one per second. But he, with a difference, Ray Nickerson made sure that the pictures were striking, vivid, memorable, pictures that you thought they might remember, something that stood out, okay. And in Ray Nickerson's results, he got results of over 90% and quite often around 98%. Okay. So the moral of the story is that in the Quarterly Journal of Experimental Psychology, a gentleman called Lionel Standing, commenting on that research, said the capacity of recognition memory for pictures is almost limitless. Almost limitless.
Yeah, that's some staggering statistics there.
Yeah. So the moral of the story is not to use pictures in your talks or presentations is missing a huge trick. And if you do use PowerPoint, use more pictures than lists of words.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then on top of that, the ability to do a sketch where people see it live is just building in a whole new thing when you hook attention rather than have the picture fully created at the start. So there's a wealth of evidence around, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've never heard those statistics, even through all the time we've worked together, and that's quite incredible. And just a minor thought on that last point around creating visuals live is, you know, some people are probably listening to this thinking, yes, but we're all in this virtual world now. It's so much harder to do visuals live. But we mentioned a load of technological solutions to doing that, like Google Jamboard. But I know when we've worked together, Graham, a lot of the time you still do it on a piece of paper and can hold it up to the camera, and it's still just as powerful, right?
I know. You can. You could be in a virtual meeting, right? It really, low tech is the answer. And you've got a clipboard with a piece of A4 paper on it, and you sort of lean to one side, hold the picture up, hold the clipboard up, and you draw the graph that you wanted to explain, you know, to the group.
Yeah.
In
fact, with that client, the other week, we spent hours, didn't we, researching technological solutions for doing this.
Yes.
And came to the conclusion that we should just ask everyone to have a pen and a pencil.
I know. it's amazing, really. But it's very immediate, and it's very engaging. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, and Graham, it was always an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And I think from today, what I've taken, what I hope everyone listening has taken, is, you know, the absolute power of being able to visualize to make things memorable, for people to remember messages that you're trying to get across. And that can be done by anyone, anywhere, with some very simple skills. And I, you know, I just tried to write down the benefits of the visualization. So, you know, we are challenging people's beliefs by showing that anyone can do a sketch or a drawing. It can explain things more simply. It can make people remember things more. It's fun and can be used as a great icebreaker to bring groups of people together to understand each other better. And you can use it to create these powerful visions, which mean people will achieve more. So as leaders listening to this podcast, you know, go I'd like to think you can walk away from this podcast thinking we have to figure out how to do some more visualizations. So
absolutely, and anyone can learn it, you know, anyone can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to join us on the podcast today. Graham, it's like I say, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. We will be hosting the podcast as usual. We will also put some content onto the website at www.xlcommunications.com so that you can look at maybe a few sketches on there. But also we'll put some links to the TED Talks, as well as to sort of Amazon to be able to buy Graham's book and things like that, because I can't recommend them enough. So thank you for joining us on the podcast, everyone listening, and I really hope you've enjoyed. So thank you so much, Graham.
Well, thank you, Tom, and thank you everyone who happens to have listened in. I'm delighted that you took the time to do so.
Thanks, Graham. Speak to you soon.
Cheers, Tom.